Salutations. Welcome to the Agile Revolution. Tony here.
And Craig.
And we have a very special guest today, Esther Derby.
Hello, Esther.
Hello.
First time in Australia.
It is. I can't imagine this is... How did I live this long without coming to Australia before?
Seeing kangaroos bounding down the streets or anything?
Not so far, but I did see a guy who has a little stand with a rat.
A rat?
A rat.
A rat. Yeah, he's got a little stand and his little rat, and the rat is eating lettuce and other things. I'm not sure what it's about.
Yeah,
but that's the only wildlife I've seen is the rat.
That's not a normal thing.
That's not
So no kangaroos, but one small rat.
Yeah, so we are in Sydney at the Agile Australia Conference, and so for people who are going, who's Esther Derby? Right, we were introduced to you through your awesome book back, which is, how long ago was the retrospective?
2006.
So if you haven't read that book, go read it. But that's, you know, there's plenty of other interviews and things about that. But that's how I think we really got to know about you. But since then, so many really awesome things. And you've been a great keynote today on leadership and leadership at all levels. Tell us a little bit about that for the people who weren't at the conference.
Sure. I think our traditional definitions of leadership have focused very much on one individual who is either charismatic or has positional power or coercive power or some way of getting other people to do what he wants them to do. And I think servant leadership is a step in the right direction, but I don't think it goes quite far enough. So the definition of leadership that I like is from Jerry Weinberg. And he defines leadership as the ability to adapt the environment or adjust the environment so that everyone is empowered to contribute creatively to solving the problem, which is a much, much broader definition of leadership, and it's not confined to one individual. And it also acknowledges the fact that performance is a function of the person and the environment. So if we really want to improve our organizations, yes, we need smart people and we need to develop their capabilities, but we also have to pay attention to the environment that we're asking them to work in.
Absolutely. I just want to pick up one little thing. You mentioned servant leadership, which is a name that's always grated with me because it, I don't know, it just has other connotations.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow, what do we got going on out here?
Why don't we always pick the places?
We always pick the places where the music comes.
The music comes.
Back on the servant leadership, I agree with you, and it's the one that whenever you're actually doing any type of work in leadership in Agile, it's the one that the leaders don't get.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it talks about, rather than, it puts the emphasis on really developing the people who you are leading, which I think is good. But as I said, I think it's an incomplete definition,
right?
Because it's still focused on the individual and it ignores the environment. And I don't know, you said people struggle with that a little bit. Say more about that.
The reason I see them struggle with it is because for them they go, well, I empower my people, I send them to training, I do this, therefore I'm a servant leader. And it's so much more than that. And the amount of times that I hear that, it's like brain-splittingly painful. And Craig's nodding because he's been there as well.
Yeah. Well, I think it's... I prefer a different definition.
Yes. Mm. And I must say that this morning, picking up on that, it really hit me because I often talk about leadership.
Yeah.
The three L's, because it's leadership at all three layers. Mm-hmm. And this morning when you were talking about all leaders...
Yeah, all levels and all domains.
Yes.
I make the distinction about steering domain, enabling domain, and doing domain to kind of get out of the idea that it all has to be hierarchy and it all has to be people higher status, higher power. There are concerns that have to be addressed in any organization in all three of those domains, and you need leadership at all of those. Right. And if you don't have leadership at all three of those domains, you're not going to function very well.
Mm. And I think I really like the word enabling. So when I was sort of getting the servant leadership there, I think if we actually sort of put more of the word enabling in there, that we were there to enable that team, that you need that vision, and something we've heard a lot of people at this conference talking about now is, you know, really making sure that we understand that vision. Almost every talk I've been in has been at that level. And then we've got the people, who are actually getting their hands dirty, and if they're enabled and understand what that is, of course that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think, particularly in knowledge work, it is astonishing to believe that people can actually make good decisions and create excellent products without a deep understanding of their customer and the business model. Hmm. It just makes no sense to me.
And so you talk about this these diamonds where,
yes.
That gap we need to push it up and down and make that a lot wider.
Yeah, I
not the gap wider.
The diamond
wider.
Bigger. Make the diamond bigger, because who wouldn't want larger diamonds? I actually came up with that drawing several years ago. I was in some conversation, and it came to me that this is what happens. We have, the diagram is two inverted triangles with an overlap at the points, and it represents that traditionally people at higher levels in the organization, higher in the hierarchy, have a certain kind of contextual knowledge, and people at the lower levels of the organization have kind of day-to-day knowledge, and there's not a lot of overlap. And that makes organizations slow, and it usually makes them stupid. So yeah, we make the diamond bigger, where there's a bigger overlap of the knowledge, which enables people at all levels to make better decisions.
And you made an interesting observation that you thought that even very small companies, like 20 people, is where that starts.
If you don't pay attention,
Which
that
is
you start getting that divergence really pretty quickly.
Is there something particular? Because I started to thought that was what made me think a little bit this morning, because I certainly agree. I work in 1 to 200 people companies, and you just know that the ability to make change, because people, there's usually someone sweeping the floor on the weekend type of thing in small business. Why 20 though? What is it that at that sort of number? I mean, I know it's an exact number, but is there something at that number that just because you can't have an understanding of everything, there's too many people at that point?
I think you can have an understanding of much of it, maybe not all of it. What generally happens is, when a company starts, it's just a handful of people. Maybe it's only two people, maybe it's only three or four people, and they work very, very closely together, and they are working so closely that their shared understanding is a pretty big pool, right? They're all working on the product. They're all trying to get the company going. And the second ring of people that get hired are missing some of that knowledge. And the third ring is missing more of it. Right,
and they're probably more specialized at that point too, right?
Right,
I'm going to hire a marketing person rather than a jack of all trades.
Right, and so part of it has to do with as the company grows beyond that core, some of that compiled knowledge or implicit knowledge doesn't get transferred. And the other part of it is just the specialization, as you point out, and the fact that, with 20 people, even if you're in the same room, you don't know what's going on with other people all the time.
Yeah.
Right? It's just the communication overhead gets to be an issue.
One of the things to see with leadership, it seems to be a systemic failure, is that we put people into these leadership positions with either little or no training or understanding of how to be a leader, and we expect them to suddenly hit the ground running, or even worse, and you do see it in IT a lot, you promote them from within a team and then expect them to lead their peers.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting result quite often.
Yeah.
Do you see that?
Well, I live that. I mean, I was a programmer on Wednesday and a manager on Thursday of the team that I had been part of. And I was sent to basic management orientation, where I learned how to fill in personnel requisition forms and who got the canary copy and who got the blue copy and who got the pink copy. They didn't teach me anything about how to think about hiring or how to think about what kind of skills you needed, but it was about filling in the forms. So yeah, rather inadequate, And yes, I was now in a different status position relative to the people who had been my peers. And there was, understandably, some resentment. You know, there had been other people who thought they should go into that role, and there were people who were 30 years older than me who couldn't imagine I wasn't old enough to be a manager. Time took care of that, but it's a really tough thing to do. And it's a very, very different skill set. So I set about, because the company where I was, although they had some faith in me, I took charge of my own education. And I found my own mentors, and I went to graduate school and leadership, and so I took it into my own hands. And I think that's something that happens to people in corporations a lot, is that they leave their training in someone else's hands, they leave their development in someone else's hands. And I wasn't willing to do that. But it happens a lot, as you say.
Yes.
A lot. And then people are surprised. We took a really good programmer and got a leader who has some opportunities to learn.
Yes, yeah.
And you lost a good developer.
Yeah. And you lose a good developer at the same instance, and then quite often it damages their confidence.
Yeah, of course.
So.
Of course.
Yeah, and I talk to leaders, and so we end up with then what I see is the frozen middle layer, right? Because you end up with these middle layer managers who are afraid to do anything because they don't quite know how to do it. And then, of course...
Or they have limited role models. No, the people that I had to look to, at least in my instance, many of them had gone the same path as me, so they had the same limitations. And I could look at what they were doing and saying, oh, I don't want to do it that way, but knowing what not to do and knowing what to do are two different things. So, yeah, I think it is a systemic failure that we assume that because you are good at something, you will be good at managing something or leading something. They're very different skills.
And you talked about the three C's.
Yeah.
That's the name for it. That's what I'm giving it now.
Clarity, conditions, and constraints.
And I think the discussion that even just in that place is that I was sort of listening to you talk and clarity. I'm going, yeah, I get it. But the constraints one is the one that I think really piqued a lot of people's interest in there. So can you quickly explain for our listeners what the three C's are?
Sure.
Particularly the constraints, I think, is interesting.
Yeah. Well, and these are. Things you have to consider if you want to move a complex adaptive system. I mean, you can't influence things directly. You have to influence patterns by paying attention to clarity, which is people know what to work on, how their work fits in the big picture, what the company is about, you know, what market they're in, how they're positioned in the market, who their customers are, how they make money, all of that sort of thing. Clarity around those sorts of things. Conditions mean that you actually have the means to do the work. So if you're a team, that you really are a team, you're treated like a team, you have the equipment you need, you have access to expertise, you have access to information, you have feedback loops to the organization. Right. And constraints, which is the ones that people often don't think about, are boundaries. Right. So some sorts of constraints tell you what you don't do, and some sorts of constraints act as enablers to say, this is how we will act and interact and decide across a broad range of situations. So
it's guidance. It's guidance,
yeah,
rather than,
right,
than right. The 275 rules.
Heuristics for how to act. Some people call them simple rules that, again, guide behavior. Because you can't anticipate every situation, so you have to have some guidelines that will help people make decisions on the, at whatever domain they're in. And it is equally ineffective to be over-constrained or under-constrained. And I that is a mistake I see a lot of well-intentioned people fall into, particularly when they start talking about having empowered teams. It's like, oh, you're empowered. Go make this decision. Do all these things. And without some constraints, the teams either get paralyzed because there's just decision fatigue about, well, you know, how do we even decide among all these options? Or they flail, right? And that's not doing anybody any favors either.
Yeah, I see. So the other thing I see, you said they flail. And once they start flailing, how do they get out of it? Because it turns into a cascade effect.
Yeah.
Either, depending on where the level of management, but it happens. And then it becomes even harder to break that cycle.
Well, the other thing that happens is very often if a team is flailing or if they make a poor decision because they were under constrained, so they didn't know certain options were off the table, or we can decide with within $30,000 or whatever the boundary is, then the managers, well-intentioned people, again, I'm not saying anyone has ill intentions here. They come in and say, oh, no, don't do that, or that was the wrong thing, or, oh, well, I'm going to have to pull that back. And that undercuts the message of you were empowered. It's like, well, we're really only empowered if we do what you wanted us to do, is what the interpretation often is. I remember a situation when I was a corporate employee that the managers were all off at some offsite with instructions not to be disturbed, and some situation came up, and one of the, I don't remember what her grade level was, but it was not a management grade level. It was kind of a junior grade level. She looked at this situation and said, something needs to be decided, and she decided, and she made absolutely the right decision. And 2 days later, her manager came back and reprimanded her severely for, having acted above her grade level. And, that not only affected the woman involved, it affected everybody around her. Right? It's like, you want us to take initiative, we take initiative, you slap us down.
And that really harks to the root cause of what, all of us, the three of us here, but everybody listening to the podcast, when we're trying to, we're good intention on making change, but we come across these situations, and how do you start to deal with that sort of behaviour? And all, because that story is the story that we all know, unfortunately, all too often.
Well, I also alluded to the fact that we are living with a legacy of mechanistic thinking, where we have a belief that if we just decompose the work and define the jobs around, the decomposed work and specify the behaviors that people are supposed to do and their little grade levels and little boxes, that all will be well. But if people only act within their job description, not much gets done. So we need to be focusing on the work that needs to be done, not the little boxes. Nobody fits in those little boxes, and they don't really help us.
So where do you start? Is it that typical, you've got to go top down and bottom up, or do you have to inject into the middle? You do a lot of consulting. Where do you
start? Where I can, wherever there's the opportunity,
start,
I'll take
the virus,
it.
Right?
Yeah. If it's working with a team, I'll work with the team. If it's working with middle management, I'll work there. I think eventually you have to be addressing, multiple levels, but I'll start wherever I can.
So, when you say multiple levels, do you see much pull at the big levels for this type of help? Because the interesting thing for me is quite often when you do talk with a senior level, everything's okay, Jack. Looks all right from my level. Why would I want help?
It's those people.
Exactly.
I'm thinking. I sometimes have the conversation when if it starts about how are you going to fix those people over there, I ask the question, and what are you willing to change? And what if we find that there are some of the things that are you're doing that might be contributing? What are you willing to do? And sometimes people will say, well, it's not me. And then I often know that's not a great place for me to...
You pick your battles.
Yeah, I pick my battle. I may just, you know, say, okay, I'm not the right person to help you. Mm. But there, I think there needs to be a willingness to look systemically, which includes the way the company's led, the leadership of the company.
So lots of things that over the years I've seen so many good workshops and talks from you, but lately you've been talking a lot about sort of models and systems and looking at organisations and teams and things and being able, I guess, to stand away from that and look at things as a system. Tell us a little bit about some of the things that are piquing your interest right now.
Sure. Well, my colleague Don Gray and I have been doing a workshop called Coaching Beyond the Team, which we started because we kept running into coaches who are pretty good at working at the team level, but we all know that not all problems are of the team's making. They are in an environment. And so we're teaching models, methods, and tools that will help people not only think about what factors are driving the patterns they're seeing, but how can they influence other people in the organization and engage them in joint problem solving to bring systemic change. So that's one of the things I've been working on a lot, is how do we help people visualize the system, think about the system, find a place to take action, engage other people in problem solving.
It's something I'm seeing a lot more, and maybe it's more tuned into the coaching community in general, mm-hmm. but a workshop I did with you, I think it was last year, but I don't know, getting old, I can't remember the years anymore, but... But I'm getting older. Say anything about you, Tom.
We're all getting older.
Where you visualize the team about where you can make the influence, and yeah. It was all about drawing and also people like Lisa Atkins and Michael Spade are using things like constellations where you can start to think that power influence, and it's one of those things I'm seeing sort of a lot more people really start to take an interest.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's nothing new, is it?
No.
What do you think is driving it? Is it just because we are now at that place where some of those foundations sort of settle themselves, and now we're able to elevate to a higher level in the community? Is that maybe why we can start thinking about these things in more detail now?
I'm not really sure why that is. I suspect a lot of people have actually learned to work more effectively with teams, and so it's reasonable to expand out from there. But as you say, it's not new. I mean, Jerry Weinberg was writing books about system thinking in organizations and influencing organizations, years ago. So it's been out there for a while.
Maybe we're just in a place where it's our approach, our agile thinking allows us to expand that a lot more than we have before.
And maybe a critical mass of people who are beginning to see that you can't.
That's
just
what I was just saying. Yeah. I wanted
great
to
minds.
Myself, great minds thinking. I wanted to myself because I think about our coaching. Craig and I started together, and our coaching journeys are very similar. And I think about that, and if you think about our early journey, we really were team coaches. Mm. And we were so team leveled. But as we grew, we started to look outside that box because we realized there was more. And I think now with the prevalence of Agile and more people who are looking in the coaching method, that's why we're starting to get that overflow of people that are starting to look for the...
Yeah, and maybe it has to do with the fact that bigger and bigger organizations are looking to have the benefits of working in a more agile way. And when you're in a company of several dozen or 100 people, you can actually be pretty effective focusing on the team level. And when you get to a much bigger organization, you have to focus on the systemic level in order to make any significant difference.
Yeah, I'm seeing it happening now, where we won't name names, but there are some larger corporations mm-hmm. here within Australia that are starting mm-hmm. to say, well, we're going to do Agile and we're taking on Agile. But I'm stepping back and looking and watching the approach. And to my mind, I can see the flaws already, is that they're not looking at it systemically. And, you know, we've got a fleet of coaches and that will solve our problem.
Or they're not looking at it in an Agile way. It's like we're going to go Agile and this be kind of big bang sort of way. It's not very Agile. Sorry. But, yeah, I think you have to look at it systemically.
If there's no Agile fairy dust. Agility
really?
Is hard.
Really?
Agility
yeah.
is hard.
I thought Esther brought up suitcase.
Where's my fairy dust? It's right here. In
What's the uptake or the interest in the community about some of these things that you're doing now? Is it do you feel you're still on the cutting edge of some of these things, or are you finding people actually a lot more people taking an interest in thinking in a systems way?
I think there are a lot more people taking an interest in thinking in a systems way. I think there are a lot of corporate training departments that are still interested in sending people for certifications. So it's really interesting that I hear from so many people who want to learn more about this, but their company will only pay for certifications.
And I guess just a general question, because you do see a lot of the community and the things you do. Mm-hmm. What's your general sense of just how we're doing as an agile community? So we've now been going for
a long time now,
15 or 15 plus years now since the manifesto that we sort of started with.
Yeah.
And particularly, I guess, in the US where you're based, what's your feeling of the maturity?
Well, I think it is like many things where. People are interested in, the allure of the benefits, and they seem to think if they just pluck certain practices out of the basket and plug them in, things will be well. I mean, we saw that happen with TQM, we saw it happen with Lean, we're seeing it happen with Agile, where people are just kind of cherry-picking practices without understanding the principles behind the practices, or without understanding what problem they're trying to solve. I still get calls from people who say, well, we want to know what our next stage in agility is relative to our competitors. And it's like, well, that's the wrong question. It's what next thing or next practice or next shift will help you improve the way you are delivering software and providing value to your customers. So I think that's one of the biggest risks, that it's just people are plucking practices and trying to plug those in without understanding the underlying principles or values.
There has to be co-opting. I think we are going to be hitting for a tipping point. It's already been there, though, that because the nature of the types of businesses that are disrupting now, and some of those large companies can still rely on their people who've been with them for 20 years and mm-hmm. those sort of things. But there's going to be at some point, I think, where there's going to be a couple of these really big organisations. You just have to look at even things just recently in the news, like Amazon buying Whole Foods is mm-hmm. as an example, which just completely mind shifts everybody in the community. That's sort of a wake up call to this sort of approach. Then what is?
Well, this isn't a perfect segue, but as you were talking about it, made me think about something that's been on my mind for a few years, which is, there's this. As we have this legacy of mechanistic thinking and top down control and these traditional ways of organizing people and managing people. And I think the millennials are going to be a big disruptor to that.
Mm.
I mean, people speak negatively about millennials, like, oh, they want feedback all the time, they want responsibility. It's like, well, these are not bad things, right? And they aren't going to put up with abuse as a management tactic, right? They're demanding meaning in their work, purpose, collaborative atmospheres, responsibility, And I think those are all good things, and I think organizations that want to be able to hire smart, well-educated people are going to need to address those desires and start shifting their environments.
It's rather interesting because my son's one of those. Right? And interesting enough, he's just at that age where he's really got into the programming thing, right? And so mm-hmm. he's suddenly starting to understand what I do. And he started to ask questions now.
Are you cool again now?
On any given day, no.
Oh, dear.
But he's taken some of those things to his teacher. And now his teacher's asking me some questions about it, wondering if I could come and talk to the class about it, which
nice.
Is interesting. So maybe
that's
I will
nice.
Get the cool tag.
Oh, maybe.
But I think the more, if you look at that, he's in that younger age group, and they're starting to absorb that. That can only be a good thing, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the start of the evolution of the revolution
yeah.
as it goes
yeah.
up.
Mm, that's good. So many more things we could talk to you about, but
yes.
And that's another day, another podcast. But so many interesting things you're doing. If people want to know more about what you're up to, Esther, where can they find out more?
At my website, which has the very original name of estherderby.com.
Excellent.
Yeah, you can sign up for my newsletter there, which I send out on a sort of regular basis, and find out more about what I'm up to.
Excellent. And
Oh, brilliant. We hope you don't stay away too long, seeing as this is your first trip. We hope this is just the first of many.
I hope so.
So that would be really great. When you come back, we'd love to have you back on the podcast.
Thank you.
Again.
It's been delightful chatting with you guys.
All right. So we have a little tradition at the end. We normally finish with Viva la Revolution, because we call ourselves the Agile Revolution.
Is that a little tag for some reason?
If you'd like to join in with us, that'd be wonderful.
All right. So on the count of three.
One, two, three.
Viva la Revolution.
Oh, wow, even the French part of it. Excellent.
Beautiful.
Thank you, Esther.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.